the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hines. I'm John Wilkerson. And we head to the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline, where we get to say hello to our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle as he joins us for the first half of this hour. If you have a question or comment about your team, 656-9900, 656-9900. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, John and Jimmy. Thank you very much.
Well, we sure do appreciate it. Have you been able to, in person, welcome Patrick Mahomes to your level of money making?
I haven't been able to reach out to him yet, but I'll tell you something about that deal. It's a great deal for the Chiefs. You know, why an agent and a player would tie themselves to a franchise for 12 years, knowing that the contract could be obsolete in 5 years, is beyond me. That's why Dak Prescott wants a shorter deal, why Deshaun Watson wants a shorter deal, but great for the Chiefs. They don't have to make a move with Mahomes for 12 years unless they want to. And I'm guessing at some point after 5 years they'll redo it, because then there'll be a bunch of quarterbacks paid more than him. And it looked to me like Lee Steinberg was looking to be able to say that he negotiated the first $500 million contract. There's no way he's going to make all that money. There's been other long-term contracts. Donovan McNabb, 12. Brett Favre, 10. Drew Bledsoe, 10. None of them came close to finishing it.
Well, the thing that stood out, John, is that Patrick Mahomes comes from a baseball family. This seems to be a baseball-type contract. What was your reaction to the numbers when you found those out, as you just touched on briefly?
Well, it's not the numbers. The numbers, like, in the first three years, he'll make as much as Teddy Bridgewater. Through 4 years, he'll make less than Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill be unrestricted, he'll still know another 8 years. He doesn't make $40 million until 2023. The whole deal, counting the 2 years left on his current deal, 12 years, an average of $39.8 million, with a possible $450 million in new money. And he would have to make every single incentive to make $502.9 million. So I'm not gasping at the numbers, because I'm looking at those numbers and so many of them are unrealistic. I want to know about the guarantee, which is $10 million. I want to know about what is guaranteed skill and injury, not just injury, but skill and injury, like contracts in other sports. So it's good for him if he's able to play 5 or 6 years, which he should be, and it is a great deal for the Chiefs. And I don't think anybody else would be signing a contract like that. I know here the big deal was, how does this affect Deshaun Watson? It doesn't affect him one iota.
Does it affect Dak Prescott?
No, Dak Prescott's not going to go out and all of a sudden say, hey, I want a 12-year, I want a 10. Well, his couldn't be 12 because his contract's up. No way a person wants to tie himself to an organization with, unless the contract was tied to a percentage of the cap, which has never happened, or unless it was all guaranteed. There's just no way. And truthfully, I'm surprised that Mahomes agreed to this deal. To me, he should have signed like a 4 or 5 year extension. Then if quarterbacks are good, which he will be, he'll sign another 3 or 4 contracts with them. If he'd have done that, and it about every 3 years, it would be getting redone to keep it up to date with the times.
John, we have seen some Major League Baseball players opt out. We've seen some NBA players opt out. I wonder if you think there will be many NFL players that decide not to play this season.
Well, if they do, they won't get paid, so I don't think so. That's one of the many things they're haggling about. You would think that the NFL and the NFLPA would have had these things ironed out. I wrote a column about this yesterday. Some of the things they don't have ironed out: safety, when they come in, players have no clue what they're going to face as far as tests and results. Astros, Alex Bregman didn't get his results back, so he couldn't be on the practice field because they didn't come back fast enough. You see these companies that have been hired not doing their jobs. and keeping players on the sideline. They don't know how many preseason there's going to be. They don't know if their 35% of their money is going to be put in escrow. They don't know the roster size. It looks like a lot of players are going to get cut who receive money to sign and have never met their team in person. There's no opt-out clause about positive tests. What are the salary cap ramifications? Travel, some teams want to travel on game day. NFL frowns on that. What about practice? The union wants like 15 players on the field. What can you get accomplished if you only have 15 players on the field at a time? Those are things that have to be ironed out. And the Texans and the Chiefs, because they play the first game, their rookies and quarterbacks can come in on the 20th, and they're supposed to full squad report by the 25th, and then ordinarily they'd be on the field by the 26th. But now they're thinking, are we going to spend the first couple of days taking tests? Right now, they don't know.
There are just so many logistics that need to be hammered out, and you've just touched on the biggest questions that remain before it returns. What have been your thoughts on what has been a very outspoken president of the NFL Players Association?
Yeah, it's so funny. When J.C. Treader, the Browns center, took over for Eric Winston after the CBA was negotiated, the 10-year extension, and thinking, okay, well, boy, his job's going to be easy. Oops. He's thrust right into the coronavirus pandemic, and then now I think he's so far, everything he is saying, and he's saying it on their website, and then it gets picked up by outlets, everything makes sense. And there's certain things that can be negotiated. The NFL preseason games is not part of the CBA. Whatever the NFL decides, it decides. But here's why the league wants two games, not just for looking at the roster and evaluating the players. They need a practice run on if you play a game, how many players are going to turn around and test positive the next week. You know, that's something you don't wait to find that out for the first game. If you're going to be 30 guys on every team who played a game test positive, you need to know that in preseason, not in regular season. That'd wipe out 30 guys for two games. So I understand the league wanting two preseason games. The union doesn't want any. What the union actually wants for training camp is just kind of like walkthroughs. They want 3 weeks of acclimation. What does that mean? I've always thought of that as conditioning. They want, I think, 8 days with pads and right at the end. And I tell you, there's going to be a lot of bad football played early in the season, I believe, especially on defense, because those guys will not have hit anyone since last season.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And we got to speak with your good friend Mike Keith a little bit yesterday. And I'm just wondering, how uniform do you think, how unified are the owners in regards to how they want to approach this upcoming season? Because we've heard that you've had, now granted, this is a season that has not been interrupted like we've seen other sports. So is it easier for NFL owners to be unified in how they approach the season or how they'd like to see the season play it out compared to other sports where you've got some saying we shouldn't return to play, some we should, and let's do it this way?
The NFL owners are not always unified behind the scenes, but they come out as unified. That's one reason they run the sport instead of the union. Union runs baseball. Union runs basketball. And that's not the case in the NFL. So if there's some behind the scenes that disagree with what they're doing, they usually come on board. Powers of Roger Goodell's persuasion. But there is going to be a trial and error period, as there is right now with baseball, and there will be with basketball. But the games are going to go on because so much money is to be made, they believe it's worth the risk. The only way I see things being shut down is if you have massive amounts of tests that keep so many players in quarantine, you don't have enough to pay a legitimate game. Roger Goodell is always talking about protecting the shield. Well, if you're putting backups out there on both sides of the ball because you're so intent on playing because so many starters tested positive or being quarantined, you know, that's the integrity of the game. They're always about protect the shield, the integrity of the game. There'd be no integrity of the game if you did that. And I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it's good because anything can happen.
our guest John McClain. We'll get a break. We've got more with John coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The station where winners listen and listeners win. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle.
John, I want to ask you about Trey Smith, the Tennessee offensive lineman. He decided to come back for another year, and he had only two padded practices last year. That is a concern with some NFL teams, maybe all of them. But I wonder, do you think his draft status could be greatly impacted if there is no college football this season?
I think if there's no college football season, it's going to have an effect on all players, not the great quarterbacks or the great players you know of based on last year's performance. But if there was a cancellation of a series, it would affect everybody. But you're still going to have the same number of rounds. And what I would make sure I did is if I was not playing this season, I would make sure I was in great shape for when the time came that I had a combine or I had a pro day or private workout. I would blow them away because they're not going to have anything on tape. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to have college football, and it may be some fans or may not be fans, but I think there's so much money that has to be made. People are willing to take the chance.
If we do have college football and Trey Smith plays in games only without practicing, do you think that has a negative impact on his draft status?
Well, I think it depends on how he played. I think if he went out and played, they said, why do we have to have practice? But, yeah, I think there's so many different – and this is something we've talked about this in the past. And NFL swears this isn't true. You can play a whole season. You can play three whole seasons, and you can play great or you can play be mediocre. And when your season is over, if you get invited to the Senior Bowl and you go to Mobile and kick butt and practice – all of a sudden, they're going to be talking about you. The websites are going to be writing about you. If you go to the combine and you work out well, everybody's going to be publicizing it. It's what you do in the shorts and T-shirts, unfortunately, is more important than what you do when you play in games. And the NFL denies that, but I have seen it every year for them to rave and rave and rave about what guys do when they're in their shorts and the T-shirts, which to me is absolutely preposterous.
Jim Harbaugh, head coach at Michigan, says he doesn't think playing sports will make the COVID-19 outbreak any worse. Do you agree with him?
I think Jim Harbaugh sounds like a moron to say something like that because every – a nincompoop. Think about everything we're asked to do, wear a mask and socially distance. Every health expert out there says this is the best way to help prevent the virus, and they're going to go out there and they're going to hit each other for a day, and they're going to bleed and they're going to sweat and they're going to spit and they're going to blow snot on each other. And so does he really believe all of that and all that being on top of each other is not going to be effective, not going to have an effect? I can't believe it. Now, Harbaugh said some dumb things in his career, but that takes the cake.
John, we have seen teams make adjustments, prepare for what could be either empty stadiums, partially full stadiums, things along those lines. The Titans are among a group of teams that just allowed an opt-out for season ticket holders. If they choose to, they can roll their season ticket payments for the 2021 season as opposed to this upcoming fall. Are the Texans doing something similar? Have they announced their policy yet?
Oh, yeah, they did it 3 weeks ago. They said you can get your money back for this year. You can get them rolled over to next year. Just let them know. And I had some friends who had tickets. So what should I do? I said, well, go ahead and pay the money and get your tickets. And if you don't want to use them, you get your money back. And if you do, it gets rolled over till next season. And I think every team in every sport ought to allow that. And the problem is you pay your money and then – I think there was a story today that said Baltimore is preparing to play with 14,000 fans. Well, all teams have a plan to play with that number or right around it, and that number includes fans. Say you guys want to go to a game. Say the Vols were under these restrictions, 14,000 fans. Everybody had to wear a mask. Depending on your number, You enter the stadium at a certain time. You can't leave till a certain time. When you go to the restroom, every other urinal is covered. So you have lines like women do anyway. And you can't go to concessions at a certain time. And is it worth it? Instead of watching it on a big flat screen, high definition TV, I don't know. And also, not just people not next to you other than family. They can't be in front of you. They can't be behind you. You know, could you even hear a crowd of 14,000 in that stadium of 105,000? They look like ants.
Very true. And you also wonder exactly what would be the exactly how they would determine what season ticket holders get in and which ones don't. Don't know if it'd be a priority number like some have in terms of length of I guess loyalty or how teams, if they were to be able to bring fans in, but it'd be less than the season tickets sold. That just seems to me to be a headache, not only for the NFL but for college football. If we get that far down the path.
Now, John, you know the answer to that.
Well, money.
How much money you've given to the program puts you at the top of that priority, whether they say it or not. I have a friend of mine who has a suite on the 50-yard line at the University of Texas, and he said they've been told by our governor you can fill up half your station. I said, nobody's listening to our governor now. Why in the world would you listen to him about that? You know, he's been totally clueless. One of the reasons we have 10,000 new cases every day is because he didn't listen to the health experts. He listened to political pressure. And now we're in trouble. We're backpedaling like Deion Sanders. And so if he just arbitrarily says, okay, you can put 50,000 in there and all the suites, you can have the people full, I'm thinking, you know what, that ain't going to work. You know, who in their right mind with this outbreak, especially in Florida and Texas and Arizona, would want to go be around a bunch of people? Baylor plays Ole Miss here in the first game at NRG Stadium, the kickoff classic, and I had two suites reserved for my friends, and they're like, are we going to the game? I said, are you kidding me? Even if they let people go, I ain't going. You can go. I'm not getting close to a big crowd like that, including my friends. So everything is so up in the air, and the last person I would listen to is a politician. I would listen to health experts, and you hope if you're an athletic director and a president of a school, you're not listening to the politicians. You're listening to the health experts you trust.
Going back to the Patrick Mahomes deal, what do you think that means to Andy Reid? And obviously coming off of his first Super Bowl championship, I know he has to feel wonderful, but what do you think, how long do you think he might keep coaching?
Well, first of all, he was so happy he went out and bought some new Tommy Bahama's Hawaiian shirts. And I'm sure, you know, he likes to celebrate with a cheeseburger after victories, which he has admitted. I'm sure he celebrated with some cheeseburgers. Now, 2 years ago, let's see, this is 2019, I was at the combine, and I was sitting next to the stage in the interview room, and Andy was standing there about to go on, and I spoke to him. He said, how much longer are you going to do this? I said, oh, probably about another 5 years. What about you? He said, I'm going to do it until they drag me out. So something like this is like discovering the fountain of youth for Andy Reid. Everybody loves Andy Reid. He used to get unmitigated criticism because of his clock management, and deservedly so. And now that he's won a Super Bowl, you know, nobody's criticizing his clock management. I bet you this is the best time of his career, and I do not see him leaving the game anytime soon.
John, will Cam Newton be a successful quarterback in New England? Will he win a division title for the Patriots?
Jimmy, he doesn't have a lot of talent. Same thing. Problem Brady had last year, doesn't have a lot of talent. How many skill positions other than Sony Michel can he count on? N'Keal Harry, number one pick last year, missed half the year. He didn't show anything. Now maybe he'll be really good going into his second year. Julian Edelman is a great slot receiver, starting to break down. They need him to stay healthy. They need to run the ball like crazy. And so I would think I'm going to pick them to win the division. But remember, Jimmy, they lost players besides Tom Brady that helped them go 12-4 last year and win the division again. And I'm not confident that Buffalo is going to continue to prove on last season's record they made the playoffs. Buffalo's made the playoffs about 3 years ago, then missed the next year. So I'm going to pick, now that Cam Newton's there, I'm going to pick them to win the division, but there's no way they're a Super Bowl contender.
If you were to assume that the best quarterback in the NFL for the next 5 years is Patrick Mahomes, who's the second best? Would you go Lamar Jackson or somebody else next 5 years?
Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson, because mm-hmm. you look at Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, and even though Rodgers wants to play another 5 years and might, you'd have to go with a younger guy. I would take Jackson. Jackson's had one great year. Deshaun Watson's had two really good ones. He's gotten better every year despite trading DeAndre Hopkins. They have loaded up wide receivers with deep speed. Pro Football Focus has him as second best passer last year, throwing the ball beyond 20 yards. So the offense is set for him. But beyond that, maybe Carson Wentz stays healthy 2 or 3 years, and he would be in that group. I don't see Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo, or any of the recent group like Josh Allen. I think it's clearly Mahomes, Jackson, and Watson. The next one to get a contract will be Watson. After that will be this time next year. I'm guessing Lamar Jackson with 2 years left. Maybe Dak Prescott, but I think he's right behind that group.
John, what are you working on this week?
I'm working on a column for Friday about Deshaun Watson's improvement starts up front with an offensive line that returns all the starters for the first time in Bill O'Brien's 7 seasons. And then I'm doing one for Sunday about the 5 Texans players with something to prove, starting with wide receiver Will Fuller as proving to be healthy. And the next week, we're starting a series, a position-by-position look at the Texans at training camp, and I have the first one, which will be on wide receivers on our sports website, TexasSportsNation.com, and I'll look forward to talking to you guys.
John, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
John and Jimmy, thank you very much. Stay safe.
Thank you.
That's John McClain with the Houston Chronicle. You can follow his work at Cron.com as well as Texas Sports Nation on Twitter. A fantastic follow at McClain_on_NFL. That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Sports Talk rolls on 99.1, The Sports Animal. Oh. Sports Talk rolls on. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900 *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
John, we had the question earlier about Jeremy Banks, that he showed up on a depth chart. There was a depth chart that was listed. I was informed by a UT official that might have been somebody's fan site. Jeremy Banks has not been reinstated. He is not on Tennessee's official roster, and there's no word yet on whether he will be. There was a time when I thought he would be reinstated. I'm not so sure now. Tennessee is still, to my knowledge, 4 over the limit. I think that's one thing that probably hurt Tim Jordan as far as him being kept on the team with his incident. But Jeremy Banks is not on the roster right now. I'm not saying he won't eventually be, but he's not at this point. Also, the Ivy League, John, there's no football this fall. They have already announced it. There was some speculation that they had talked about going to spring football and playing 7 games in the fall. Well, if they do have football, it'll be 7 games in the fall. They are not going to have any fall sports. They have canceled all of them. And also, they're going to come out with some type of schedule in mid-July about practice schedules and so forth. But the Ivy League is shutting down participating in sports this fall. I don't know if that's a huge surprise, given that the Ivy League had said they were looking at potentially having football in the spring.
Yeah, they will reevaluate and determine whether or not athletes can compete after January 1st of next year. Mm-hmm. So that would wipe out at least a month or more. Actually, it would wipe out a month and more of the basketball. So I think it's very interesting that they kind of look at it as, all right, we are finished with athletics in 2020, and we will see. As you mentioned, they say football hasn't been decided in terms of the possibility of it being scheduled in the spring. So we shall see what is the next move. But, again, there's no guarantee that this impacts one iota, anything that anybody in Division One, or I should say the FBS, does. But this is something that just is a big grain of salt to hang right there on the landscape.
Yeah, it is. And but I'm like you. I don't think it means other people will follow suit. Now, in case some people missed it earlier, Ray Tanner, athletic director at South Carolina, says he's thinking maybe 15 to 20,000 fans right now, if they have fans at all. There's still the possibility they might not have fans. I have been told by a number of sources that Tennessee's most likely model will be 25% to 33% capacity at Neyland Stadium. I'm told there's no way they're going to have 100,000 there. I understand why Philip Fulmer is saying he's going ahead with that, but I think that's highly, highly unlikely. There's still the chance they would not have fans at all, but I think the model that they're trying to incorporate would be 25% to 33% capacity, which basically means 25,000 to 33,000 fans. So that's, I think that's where Tennessee is. And, John, also there was a VFL, Andrew Toles, that has fallen on some tough times.
Yeah, very much so. And this this was a story that, came to light a couple of weeks ago, and it really has been something to see. Andrew came here, played baseball for Todd Raleigh, did not he wound up leaving the program or being dismissed from the program as Dave Serrano transitioned to be the head coach in Knoxville, but he went on to the major leagues, made it to the major leagues, and he, you saw him be a contributor for the Dodgers. In fact, made some great catches, one of which saw him tear his ACL, but he had gotten hurt, did not report for the 2019 season, and it was something to see the family reaction, because they said they were actually glad to hear that he had been arrested, because that meant he was alive. The family had kind of lost touch with him. And so it's such a shame to see Dalton Saberhagen, who is everybody's best friend, the VFL and former Tennessee pitcher, he tweeted that he was Toll's roommate. And so he said, just check in, you know, on your friends, make sure you keep up to date with them, and because you just never know what somebody's going through. But his sister was the one that said that, you know what, my family felt relief. It was really crazy to say, but seeing the mugshot was the best thing ever, because we didn't know whether he was dead or alive. And so Toles, who is now 28 years old, made his way from the low minors to the majors in just months, became a postseason star for the Dodgers back in 2016, was the starting left fielder for the second half of that season, as well as early 2017, tore a knee ligament in that season, spent most of 18 at AAA Oklahoma City, but never reported to spring training in 2019 due to what was called a personal matter, did not play that year. And his family told the USA Today that he's been in at least 20 mental health facilities since 2019. And he's currently in a Key West hospital and has a court date, or had a court date for this past week, according to his sister. But they are not really optimistic about it. They don't expect him to show up. Said he's probably not even aware. They'll hold him in a hospital because he can be incoherent. They'll give him medication and until he gets through it. And then after that, when he's able to verbalize that he wants out, he can leave when he seems fit. So they have talked about the troubles and struggles that he has had. It's such a shame to hear. And, Jimmy, I mean, he's a legacy. His father played football for the University of Tennessee, and you just hate to hear. And it's also you continue to hear how far-reaching either anxiety and or mental difficulties are in the world of athletics. But wishing the very, very best to Andrew Toles and the fact that he can get help, and consistent help at that.
Yeah, his dad, Alvin Toles, was a first-round draft pick of the New Orleans Saints in 1985, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. But mental illness is tough. As you know, I had it in my family. I have friends that have dealt with mental illness. I try to engage with charities in town, like Helen Ross McNabb, that help folks with mental illness. It's a tough disease. It's a very tough disease, and And it's not one where all of a sudden you take a few pills and you're over it. It's a constant battle. And one of the problems is that sometimes when you do take medication and you feel better, you think you don't need the medication. Well, no, you still need to. That's why you feel better. And sometimes you feel better, you get off the medication, and you revert. And I don't know that that's what happened with Andrew Tolles, but it is a common situation that is problematic to folks that battle mental illness. So it's a tough situation for him, and hopefully he can get better. I'm stunned when you said 20 facilities since 2019. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that. That's an awful lot.
It is.
It seems as though you could have found something that could have worked for him without him bouncing around from one facility to another. I don't know all the things behind that, but my heart goes out to the Tolles family. It's a tough disease. It's a tough situation, and hopefully he can get better with medication, stay on the medication, and be productive.
Yeah, I mean, the Dodgers were his second organization. He was drafted by the Tampa Bay Rays and was their minor league player of the year in 2013, but was released in 2015. And so there was a member of the Dodgers front office who had been involved in Tampa. But anyhow, he said that Tolles was working the early morning shift in the frozen food section of a grocery store before the Dodgers found him and recruited him to come join them, where he again eventually made it to the major leagues. But Andrew Friedman, the Dodgers president, said, "It's heartbreaking, literally heartbreaking. I have a long history with Andrew, and I just wish there was something more we could do to help." Friedman drafted Tolles when he was in the Rays organization. Dodgers teammate Justin Turner has offered to pay all of Tolles' medical bills. At this point, though, again, family members say they need him to stay put, as you were talking about. But as his sister has said, that once he has the ability to verbalize that he wants to leave, that's when he winds up being able to leave. And so that's why you've seen so many different facilities be involved. But again, struggle with anxiety is very real for so many, whether they're in the world of sports or not. But and apparently Tolles has enough money from his playing days that this allows him to travel, to stay in some really nice places. But for instance, when he was arrested in Key West, he was essentially charged with trespassing on property because he was sleeping behind a Federal Express building at the airport and refused to move. So at times he's homeless, and at times he still has some money with which he can travel and stay in some nice places. So, again, really hate to hear this for Andrew Tolles, and wish him and his family the very best in hopefully getting some consistent help. We'll get a break unless there was something you wanted to add.
No, I don't know about his dad's situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know how involved he is. You would think that he might have made enough money from the NFL perhaps, but I don't know the answer to that. But again, as you said, hopefully he'll get help and be able to live a productive life, which he certainly can, but he's going to need to get on the proper medication and stay on it to go down that path.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
We work all day under a neon Budweiser sign. Yeah, it's a really cool thing. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, we are Sports Radio, WNML.
Segment to this hour of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
More bad news coming out of Toledo. A Toledo football player, Janelle Douglas, a defensive lineman, 22 years old, was shot and killed late Tuesday night. He was outside of a pizza restaurant. They've already arrested a 24-year-old Michael Mitchell on murder charges. But Douglas grew up in Toledo, was a member of the team. He was a junior, and he had played in 12 games his first two seasons with the Rockets. So don't know any more details about that, but gosh, you just hate to hear that kind of stuff. This happens far too often in our country. But anyway, Janelle Douglas, Toledo defensive lineman, shot and killed Tuesday night outside of a pizza restaurant.
Yeah, just awful to hear that news, see that story, and as you mentioned, it happens far too frequently.
Yeah, so bad story there. John, I wonder, we have seen really good ratings with golf tournaments. We've seen really good ratings with NASCAR. What do you think the ratings will be with the MLS?
Well, I do think that you'll see them up simply for the fact that people are very anxious and excited and just so embracing of the opportunity to watch sports that, one, are in their backyard, so to speak. And so I do think that a lot of people are trying sports that perhaps they haven't before. And so I think people will be very excited to see another that they can add to their list of options.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think we will continue to see that, and I applaud some of the sports that have gotten underway. I actually don't know what the ratings are for golf. I haven't looked at that, but I know that the Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, Phil Mickelson match that with Brady, it was unbelievable. It was the highest rated cable golf event they had had, and so I know that they did tremendous there, and I'm glued to it. If I'm not there watching the PGA event, I'm taping it to watch it. Of course, that helps for Golf Talk on Monday night at 8
yes,
o'clock. Shameless
very
plug.
Much so.
But 7 to 8 o'clock. But I think the ratings have been really good there. I know NASCAR is up. They've done very well there. And I think NASCAR has done a really good job of cramming a lot into a short period of time. And so now with MLS, with soccer, I think you're going to see the same thing. Now, they've had some soccer matches being played overseas, and I have no idea what ratings you might have there. But you know what I'm curious about, too, and I don't have any idea about this one either, but when I wake up, one of the first things I do is I turn on ESPN and I watch and I check out news and notes and see what's out there, and it's typically watching the Korean baseball organization. And so I've watched more Korean baseball this summer than I ever have. In part because I'm looking for news items and listening to conversation with the announcers and the guests that they have, which has been their approach. And I've also seen some players, if I can remember their names right, Preston Tucker, who was a really good up-and-coming player in the United States. He's playing over there, and he had a home run today. Mel Rojas is trying to win the Triple Crown. He's a guy that had played in the majors. And so you're seeing some players like that along the way. But I'm curious to know what kind of ratings ESPN's getting for Korean baseball, which if you're starved for sports, there's a live one right there for you. I can tell you this. I've been watching it. So I just wonder how many other people have tuned into that.
Yeah, we caught up with Knoxville's own Chad Bell, who's pitching over there. And so it was – it was something to see. It was the first time, Jimmy, that I had spoken with a guest the morning of a show, and then that guest had gone through a full night's sleep before joining us on that show that day. Because it was 6:15 in Knoxville. It was 7:15 the next morning in Korea. But it was great to catch up with Chad. And if you want to hear that conversation, you can find it at 99.1thesportsanimal.com. But it was something to see that, and of course, they're very aware that for a while, for the sport of baseball, essentially the eyes of the world, they've been on the biggest stage because there have been broadcast here in America. So they could, there was content, there were sports to tune into. And I do wonder, you know, you were talking, one of the stories that you shared was that Marv Albert was not going to be making the trip to Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
79 years old, not going to be calling the NBA. But I was also wondering, you know, with at least announcers, would you not examine or explore the opportunity to give them a booth where they just simply call the footage? Carl Ravitch, I believe, is one of the announcers calling these games in Korea. But yeah, he does so, obviously, in Connecticut or wherever his studio or home is. And so I just wonder if you wouldn't be able to have a little more freedom, at least from the broadcast side, because as long as you have the feed, you can really have your announcer be just about anywhere. Now, you roll the dice of the feed getting interrupted or there being a huge technical issue that could, of course, have everything just fly apart from the seams. But I still think that the fact that you've had American announcers calling Korean baseball, that at least gives you the opportunity to examine some of those options for what will be these either bubble sports like the NBA or hub sports like the NHL when those playoffs start.
Well, and here's what the PGA is doing. They've got Jim Nantz on site. And then they have three color commentators in Orlando at the Golf Channel. And then there's usually one or two on-course reporters, and then there's an interviewer. So that's what they're doing on the PGA Tour. But to your point, three of the announcers that are analysts are back in Orlando watching it on TV, seeing what everybody else is seeing with Jim Nantz on site. So I think you bring up a good point. I don't know why Marv Albert couldn't be watching on TV somewhere and just calling the game at that point. And by the way, I remember a couple of years ago we interviewed Kara Lawson about this. When she was at ESPN, she was calling some games at a studio. I think it was weather-related. Mm-hmm. And so they were watching some games, and she was the color analyst as she and her the play-by-play person were announcing those games, and she just said it was kind of odd to be watching the game on TV and calling it, but that's what they did, and that was a few years ago.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got another hour of sports talk, and again, we'll remind you that you have the starting 11, Will West. He's got a new show this week that'll come your way at 7 o'clock, and it'll be an encore presentation of In the Cage with Vince Ferrara at 8 o'clock. So all of that after sports talk. But hour number four coming up, we look forward to catching up with VFL tennis coach, tennis commentator, and all-around tennis enthusiast, Paul Anacone. He'll join us at 6:35, but up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6 as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.